One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
I've been getting a lot of questions about when is the way back going to be on Patreon, and I'm excited to announce it is finally here. Plus, bonus content. Right now, for just $5, you get the Honeydew a day early, you get it ad-free, and you get a full bonus episode of the Honeydew with Y'all where listeners highlight their lowlights, and it's going to stay that way. $5. And for just $3 more, you're also going to get the way back a day early and ad-free. But that's not all. You'll get exclusive bonus content with the guests, some fun segments, maybe some games, and we'd love to get you guys involved. And that's all for only $3 more. And there's no censorship on any of the Patreon episodes. Subscribe now. Fort Lauderdale, unfortunately, I'm not going to be able to make it. We're going to try to get some dates rescheduled as soon as possible. Tampa, Florida, I can't wait to come back to Side Splitters. I'll be there Saturday, December 7th, one night only. Tempe, Arizona, I'll see y'all December 20th and 21st at the Tempe Improv. Get your tickets now on my website at ryansickler.com.
The Honeydew with Ryan Sickler.
Welcome back to the Honeydew, y'all. We're over here doing it in the Nightpants Studios. I'm Ryan Sickler, ryansickler.com, Ryan Sickler on all your social media. And I'm going to start this episode like I start them all by saying thank you. Sincerely, thank you very much for supporting not only this show, but anything that I do, whether you're coming to live shows, merch, I don't care what it is. Thank you so much. And if you do want to come see a live show, tickets are on my website at ryansickler.com. And if you got to have more, then I'm telling you, you got to have the Patreon. All right. It's this show. It's the Honeydew with y'all. And every week we hear something wildly different. It is the best show on Patreon. It's $5. It's been that way since day one. It's in library of hundreds of episodes, and it's all your show. So if you or someone you know has a story that has to be heard, please submit it to the Honeydew Podcast at gmail.com. Excuse me. Please submit it to honeydewpodcast at gmail.com. And hopefully we get to do an episode with you. And thank you for supporting the way back. Make sure you're watching that every week. It's such a fun show to watch, to bring people's childhoods and past to life. And that's it, guys. That's the biz. You know what we do here. We highlight the lowlights, and I always say these are the stories behind the storytellers. I am very excited to have this guest on today. It's been a minute. Been wanting it for a while, ladies and gentlemen. Please welcome Top Papa. Welcome to Honeydew, Top Papa.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for being
Thank you for
buddy.
The coffee and the big cup.
You got it. Thank you for making some.
I had help.
Yeah. Everyone needs help with that thing out there, dude.
Yeah, it's tricky.
Well, thank you for being here. And before we get into whatever we're going to talk about, please, right there, plug it all, buddy. Everything.
Plug it all. I guess the biggest thing right now is my Netflix special, Home Free. Just came out a couple weeks ago. And it's very funny. It's my third Netflix, and it's up. And
congrats, man.
People are loving it. I haven't heard that, but I'm assuming. and then my Breaking Bread with Tom Papa podcast, which you have to come on.
I'd love to break
we'll
bread
feed
with you.
You. Yeah, it'll be good. You get bread when you come.
That's what I'm talking about. This body's built on bread.
Yeah, this isn't carb-like. Yeah, so the podcast and the special, and then tompapa.com for if you want to see me live.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, let's dive in, because first of all, I want to know your whole history. It's easy to look shit up on the internet, but mm-hmm. I know not to believe a lot of what I read on the internet. So where originally are you from? Tell me about your parents, your siblings.
I grew up in New Jersey.
Where?
Northern New Jersey, about half hour outside of New York City.
Okay.
That's like New York Giants, Yankees.
Meadowlands.
Area, Meadowlands, yeah. And my parents grew up right by the Meadowlands in Clifton, New Jersey. They were high school sweethearts. And they got married and had me. And then I lived in East Rutherford, which is the Meadowlands. Mm-hmm. It was my first apartment when I was a baby, which I have no memory of. And yeah, and then they had me and my two younger sisters.
Okay, so you have three kids. Two. Now, what did your parents do?
My father was a salesman. He was he worked in like early communications, like before, like just as all computer telecommunications stuff was starting. He was like in those companies, like GDC and AT&T's of the time, you know. And he was a very successful salesman. And then my mother was a mom, and then she went back to school when we were little kids to get her degree. And then she ran a small ad agency.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
And that's also back when you literally had to go back to school. You had to drive. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Now if you want to continue, you get your master's, you can absolutely do an online program. You don't mm-hmm. have to get in the car, leave the kids.
Everybody,
dinner's in the oven. I'm gone. I'm going to do my classes tonight.
No, dropping us off.
Do you remember
going
it?
Going back. Yeah, yeah.
You remember when she went back?
Yeah. It was really pretty cool. She was like, she was going for it. And she always had a, even when we were really little, I remember her having a little feminist bent to the whole thing, even though she was raising three of us and my dad was on the road and stuff. And she like, you always, something was always bubbling. She was always going to do something. And then I remember her starting to go to school. I remember her graduating. We had a big party when she graduated.
Oh, nice. Okay, good.
Yeah. And she did the whole thing.
And did your parents stay together the whole time? Were they that couple?
Yeah. They're still together.
Are they really?
16 years old.
16?
Started at 16. And they're going to be 80 next year.
How about, I mean. Yeah.
It's a big one.
That's big and awesome. They're going to be 80. So what is that? 64 80. Years of marriage?
Yeah.
64, 74. Yeah. Holy crap.
Yeah, I don't know if they're at 60. But yeah, no, they went the whole way.
They met at 16. Met I'm thinking 16, marriage.
Right. Gotcha, then married probably 21 or something.
I mean, their marriage is almost a senior citizen.
Yeah.
That's a long one.
It's a while. Yeah. It's a good one. It works. They're good. They're pretty solid. They always seemed younger than the other kids' parents.
Are they still healthy and like take care of each other and stuff?
Yeah. It's a weird though. Like they're healthy and they're still mobile, and my father still rides his motorcycle.
Nah.
And
what kind of motorcycles your dad ride?
He's got four right now.
What? Are there other guys? Okay, I'm blown away. Yeah. Are there other 80-year-old men out there on motorcycles? Does he have like a crew?
He's got a crew. And
I wouldn't think anybody over like 75 would ride a motorcycle.
Well, that's changing, wild. And it's a funny dynamic because a couple of them are moving to trikes.
Oh yeah.
You know, the three-wheeled motorcycles, which makes perfect sense. And my father was like, I'm like, dude, just try it. Sit on it. I won't do it. He won't even sit on
once
it.
Once that rheumatoid hits, you're going to have to hit I think that's got like the tube brake system or something in there.
Yeah.
You don't have to do the hands.
It's
a foot brake. I think they have a foot brake in there.
It's a little bit like a car, but
it's
you're
cheap,
still out
whatever.
There.
Yeah.
You're 80.
It's still open.
You're 80.
You're 80.
I mean.
Your reactions.
Yeah. I mean, you also, know now, like just even at our age, it's like, you know, stuff's different. He's. You know, 30 years older than I am. That's
I
like,
have my motorcycle license. I will not ride anymore.
Out here?
I was never comfortable on it. I really wasn't. I had it for a summer. I had a bike for like a summer and a half. I'm from Maryland, so I'm...
When you were a kid?
Nah, I'm an adult. I mean, I'm a young man. I'm 22, 21.
Yeah.
20, 21, somewhere in there. And I was never that guy, though. I'm the cruise dude. I don't need to get anywhere fast. I don't care. But there's nothing like being on the Beltway and having an 18-wheeler, that little, I'll never forget it. You know, the little center hub that floats?
Yeah.
Right here.
Yeah.
Just this far away where you're going 80 miles an hour. Yeah. And I look over and I'm thinking like, what am I doing?
I know. It
I
is
don't
insane.
Have a chance.
It's insane.
And these days with the texting and everything, I would even think it's not an old man's game.
I was just coming here to see you. I was coming from the beach. And there were four guys on Electra Glides, Harleys, mm-hmm. just cruising. And I was behind them. And I always take pride because I know, give them distance, don't ride up on them, you know, kind of like
make room for them.
Yeah. I feel like I'm part of the pack. I'm like, yeah. I'm still doing it, guys. I had a bike once. And it's definitely, when you're doing it, it's different than you looking at it from the car angle. You know what I mean? Like when you're in it, it's a lot like stand-up in that when you're doing it all the time, it seems like the most normal thing in the world. You take a year off like we did during the pandemic, and you're like, this is a weird thing we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
This is a weird thing.
We're not allowed to do either at that time. You're like, yeah, that's weird. We have a job we're not allowed to do.
Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, there is definitely I rode with him and
you did.
With his crew and stuff for like a long time. And when I had my first daughter, and it was right at the time my career was starting to get some footing, and my daughter was born, and it was like, and I moved to LA, and I was like, I just gave my bikes to my nephews.
That's nice.
And I haven't been on a bike since. And I miss it. There's a lot of great things about it, but the hairiest ride he ever had was getting his friend's bike from San Diego and coming up to see me in LA. And my mother and my father got off that bike at my house and they were frazzled.
Wait, she was on the back the whole way?
Yeah, they've done like the whole world together on the back.
Your mom's like, they would go to Europe passenger.
And yeah,
like she really knows how to ride back there.
Yeah, she has, they'll do small rides now, but yeah, it's, you know, it's, you get older, there's stuff, you know, they pulled into like a town and they just kind of like tipped over like in traffic in like a little New England town. They just kind of like,
what I'm worried about.
Just, you know, just not putting
your
feet. I did that once when my wife and I went cross country on my bike and we were just so tired and we pulled into the Days Inn and she was going to go check us into the hotel and she got off the bike and went in and I just sat there, put my feet on the pegs. And then realized, no, my feet should be on the ground.
Boom.
And I fell over. You're just tired. And, you know, when you're tired and pushing 80, you know, hopefully he'll get a trike.
I hope so.
Yeah. But he's got four bikes now. He's got an Electra Glide, a VMAX, and a BMW and something else.
I was just so young and dumb. And I knew better, too. I had an FZ600, a Yamaha. It was like a year before they made the FZR.
Mm-hmm.
It was just a fast fucking rocket.
Yeah.
And I'm coming back from Ocean City, Maryland.
Uh-huh.
You probably know it. And I'm going across the Chesapeake Bay Bridge, which is voted the scariest bridge in the U.S.
It is.
And it starts pouring down rain.
Oh, no.
And as I'm already through the toll. And I'm like, fuck. And I mean torrential. And I am driving across that bridge and hitting those grates where it's like, rrr, rrr.
It's windy. It's windy.
It's super windy. And I'm like, oh my God. Oh my God. Never again.
I killed a flamingo or like a crane. I was going to see the Grateful Dead when I was in college with my buddies. And we're doing the Chesapeake Bay Bridge Tunnel, Bridge Tunnel. And we went through the tunnel and we came out to go up to the bridge. And there was a crane, like long neck, long
Fabio
legs, caught in the wind. He was just could not get its bearings. And I can't go this way. And there's cars coming. I can't go that way. So I just got to. We just screamed for the bird and he came and just like hit the windshield and broke my rearview mirror. And I remember it clear as day looking in my rearview mirror and just seeing this bird like in all different, just, oh.
And it didn't make you wreck or anything?
No, you know, a bird's pretty light.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like hitting a deer, but it was big. Like it was a 6 foot long in all directions thing. But that, yeah, that is nasty. Being on a bike on that, forget it. Forget it.
I want to talk about some of your, like growing up, some of your childhood friends, because you told me something interesting before we talked. And you said that all your, you said best friends, I believe, have died, all of them.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't talked to anybody who's ever sat down and said, all my best friends have died. And then I said,
yeah.
Are you the last one? You said, well, they all necessarily didn't know one another. You're the common denominator.
Yeah, they weren't a crew.
So who's the earliest, longest tenured friend before checkout?
When we were 15, 14 going on to 15. My best friend Keith, was funny, super funny, big Irish family. And
how do you know from high school? You play sports?
No, grade school.
Oh, wow. Okay.
We were like third grade.
Wait, so you didn't meet him
third
at 15?
Third grade, met in third grade.
Gotcha.
And then we're friends until freshman year of high school. And yeah, and then he passed away in a moped accident.
I'm sorry. We're sitting here talking about motorcycles.
I know. Yeah, exactly.
I can't even believe we're talking about
you. Yeah, that's right. I didn't even connect that.
But see, but you know, about your age. But I remember that was the
mopeds
pedal start
hot.
One. Yeah.
They were hot. They were
and
those
I think
pooks.
Yep. And what were you, I think legally maybe 13, you were allowed to like have one. So not a full license, but you could go around on it, right? Am I right about
you're
that?
You're exactly right. Okay. And there was no place on the road for a moped.
And no one's wearing helmets, I'm sure.
There's
back
no
then.
Place. You're not fast enough to be like a motorcycle going with traffic. You're on these little New Jersey side roads with no shoulders. And they were fast.
They were pretty fast.
And, you know, kids would drill holes in the baffle and make it louder and have a little more, get a little more horsepower out of it. And two of my friends had them. And, there was just this one stretch of road that didn't have any curbs, and it was parking lots and coming and going, and some van or truck or something came out of nowhere, and that was that. And so that was really pretty. That was heavy.
How'd you find out? Who told you?
That's a good question. It must have been my parents.
And did they do something for him at school? Do you remember like a thing? Or
it was no, it was a funeral and a at the church and at the nursing, not nursing home, the funeral home, and it was pretty heady because it was the first real death that I had experienced.
That's what I wanted to ask.
There were no like there was it was the first one. There was no grandparent. Everyone was still going.
Yeah, I mean.
And at that young, young age, I learned so much about the whole process. You know, it's devastating. It's it wrecks you. But then all that stuff about people's fake grief at the funeral because it was almost like a happening because it was a kid, you know, so people came in watching how adults dealt with it, watching how my parents dealt with it. It was very, I was very observant about the whole process. It was really, really heavy. But then I got like, it kind of just put it all in perspective real quick.
Mm-hmm.
Like I had at 14, a very clear hyper awareness of what death was. You know what I mean? Like mm-hmm. I know people who didn't lose people till much later and they have a hard time dealing with it or understanding loss or understanding the finite nature of all this. But when you're 14 and that happens, like with the like funniest, closest kid to you, you grow up that way. I mean, I was a moron in a whole bunch of other ways and still had to grow a ton. But that part of it.
Do you ever think about that now as a parent, how you actually back then were witnessing every also? Because a girl who's like my sister, no doubt, she passed away in a car accident with another friend of ours. Some drunk driver hit them, killed both of them.
Yeah.
They were buckled in, whole nine.
Yeah.
And I remember witnessing a lot of parents being scared to come talk to her mom or say anything because that's their worst nightmare.
Mm.
You ever think about that now as a parent? Like you're looking back, like, that's somebody's child in there. And other parents are like, we don't want that to happen to our fucking kid.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, it's, you know, when you have kids, it's one of the greatest blessings of your life. And so one of the most terrifying experiences of your life, because you have to put out of your mind, or quickly, not even put out of your mind, quickly usher out all the invasive thoughts about the worst things that can happen to them out of your head, and just keep, and then order dinner. You know what I mean? Like, it's and to, you know, and I remember as a kid, like, hearing, well, the worst thing you could ever happen to you is lose a child. Like, that is the ultimate death, you know, in terms of being painful. And, you know, now that my kids are 22 and 19, it's like, well, what a blessing that we got those 19, 20 years, you know, without, like, we didn't have to do what those parents had to do, you know, who knows what the future holds and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, that being a parent definitely puts it in perspective. The cool thing is, I still run into his family.
You do?
Uh-huh.
That's nice.
Randomly, because of comedy.
Yeah, yeah, good. Did they come see you or something like that? Like, hey, we're
here. I've seen a couple of his sisters have come to shows. I wrote about him in one of my books, my first book, I think. And
is that, you know what,
and
man,
then got to the mother. The mother,
good for you,
got to read that.
I mean, man, how years later, how about that?
Yeah.
This little boy that was friends with my son who died is now a famous comedian, and he also remembers my son in a fond way. He's not on podcasts.
Yeah.
So we used to whatever. Yeah. That's fucking awesome.
No,
good for
it's
you.
It's great. It's it's definitely kind of trippy that like his spirit has always kind of been circulating. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, he was very, very funny. He was the funniest person I knew. He was so funny. He would make adults just.
It's always just more tragic when they're funny.
Oh, God. And a big Irish funny
Everybody
family.
Everybody thinks it's more tragic when they're pretty. Nah, it's more tragic when they're funny.
And he came from a funny family. Yeah. Like, the whole, like, there was a lot of them, and they're Irish. It was like the priest would come over, and even that guy was funny. And, but to be in that family and be like the funniest one was like, he was funny.
Yeah.
So like, I always had thoughts of him when I was starting comedy, you know, and then to be, like you said, like in the journey of comedy and having them still kind of circulate. And, I just pulled a Bible off of my shelf, that I had just like kept in, and it's his Bible. It was his Bible from when we were in CCD together, into catechism.
CCD,
yeah. Catechism. His little name, his name is like written in the thing. I think it was like 1979 or something. And it's his Bible. So I keep that on my desk. So he was always kind of still is kind of like, it kind of bends time. It's been so long, so long.
So the way this went for you is, you got the news and then you go to a viewing or a funeral. There was no hospital visit. Like, he was gone right away. He didn't sort of live for a while.
No, like you're piecing it together. I remember hearing about the accident and then hearing, is he going to be okay? And then hearing,
he's gone.
Yeah. I think I talked about that once in my act, that all of a sudden words that I never heard before, all of a sudden were being heard in the house. Critical condition, life support, services, wake, all of that was like, you know, as a little kid, you're like, what? It was really, really heavy. And so that was 14.
And so who's the next friend that passes and how old are you then?
So then, I have lots of really close friends. I come from a great high school and I'm still really tight with a lot of them. And I went to college and I had a really close friend, Little Dave. We called him Little Dave because he was little guy. And the first time we met him, he was being, and it's funny, Keith was little too. Keith was really short and he was kind of a wise ass. Like, he was really funny. And we kind of, and I was big. I was this size in seventh grade. And, and Keith was like that. So he would wise off to people. and they would go come over to kick his ass. And then I would step in like my bodyguard, and then I would beat their ass, and or at least stop him from getting his ass kicked. And that was the routine. And it wasn't like so noble. He was intentionally trying to get us into fights by being an ass to people. But the point is, he was this little guy, little troublemaker. And then in college, I meet little Dave one night. We're in college, and some drunk assholes in the dorm across from us are shoving this little kid in a garbage can. Everyone's drunk on a Saturday night in the beginning of school. And I, because I was this size forever, I do have a affection for smaller, odd guys. And so I stepped in with another friend of mine to save this kid who's being stuffed in the garbage can. And we got in a fight with the guys that were doing it. And we befriended Dave, who... he was little Dave because my roommate was another Dave who was like six. So little Dave and big Dave. And so we became friends with little Dave. And little Dave, same thing. Small guy, didn't take shit from anybody, was just really smart, really funny. He was very small, like, but he had long hair, he was a deadhead, and he just had this chutzpah. He just had this, nobody was going to, people would see him and like want to mock him or something. You know, he had real little hands and big eyes. And, but he was just like, he stood more proud and more confident than anyone I ever met. And he just would not take shit from it. And we were back in the situation of, you know, he sticking up for little Dave or whatever. But I learned a ton from Dave. Like, he was this great individual spirit, and he was super, super funny again. And he was just his own person and really cutting. Like, he, as funny as that little description is of him, he was the coolest of us. You know, we were all like these, I was in theater and we were all like into the dead, and he was the one that was the arbiter of what was cool. Mm-hmm. He got the Village Voice. He said, these are the bands. He said, this is the music. He said, these are the shows we're going to go to. He called out your girlfriend if she wasn't cool enough to hang with all of us. You know what I mean? That guy.
Yeah. Tracy ain't coming.
Right. Dude, what's with her?
Yeah.
Smoked tons of weed. Really great guy. And smart. And so we graduate college, and my wife and I are living with each other. We're probably boyfriend, girlfriend at that time. And we go to meet little Dave and his new wife for lunch on like a Tuesday afternoon in Chelsea, the meatpacking district in New York. Mm-hmm. We're sitting in the restaurant waiting for them to come, and they never come. And there's no cell phones. This is just before all of it. And he had a stroke in the middle of the night. He had a heart condition, which we didn't know. 21?
21.
Married, girlfriend, wife pregnant.
Oh.
And he just, in the middle of the night, got up, didn't feel right, couldn't hear, and went to the hospital. And it was the same thing. Like, I had a girlfriend's father who passed, and from a stroke after a heart surgery. And it's so funny. You, like, all once those terms hit you, you're just, you're stroke, what's not moving, brain is swelling, can you stop it before it, all those indicators. Same story as my friend who lost her father. My girlfriend who lost her father. And then by the next day, he was gone.
And how long do you remember how long you're sitting there and waiting before you decide like something's wrong or they're not coming?
At the restaurant?
Yeah.
And how like an hour?
Really?
Yeah.
And when do you find out? You leave and then
leave. You got to go home
to call.
To call from the phone that's connected to the wall.
And that's when you find out.
There's no text. There's no almost there. Hey, we're not coming. Like, you know, last thing, it happened overnight. Last thing on his wife's mind was lunch plans. Mm. It was, let's try and keep Dave alive. And it went quick. It went really quick.
Damn.
Yeah. Terrible. And there's so many, like, even just telling you, like, I always say, like, all my best friends died, but the similarities with Dave and Keith were very, it's pretty profound. It really is pretty, and maybe it was, you know, like
first.
Sometimes you lose, like, I know people who've lost their father when they were young, and you kind of gravitate towards older men, like, to have conversations and stuff. So maybe I was, had an affection for little Dave because of Keith in a way, you know.
And these are the first two significant deaths in your life, and they happen to be back to back and young.
Mm. We also had this weird thing in our high school where we lost a lot of kids in our class.
From what?
Drowning, suicide.
Wow.
Car accident. It was like, it became a thing like where all of us were like, you know, what's going, like it was too much. Mm-hmm. My daughter actually had it with her class. And it's so funny because they lost kids like through different accidents and whatever. And they were like, are we cursed and all that? And I could tell her, I went through the same thing with my class, and it doesn't register when you're a young person.
Nope.
It doesn't, like, I know exactly where she's at. I know exactly where, what they're dealing with, but it's when you're young, it's just like, you don't get it. You know,
never forget. A teacher told us one time, this is ninth grade. He introduced himself. And then he talked to us and he was like, listen, I'm going to tell you right now, I've been teaching a long time. I don't know why he ever said this. And he's like, look around, because I promise you, by the time you graduate, not everyone's going to be here. And I'm like, Jesus Christ, bro. Like, what a way to start school. And
first day.
The first death, I mean, my dad died when I was 16. So I dealt with it early. But prior to that,
it's a big one.
My great grandmom had died, and they lived in Tyrone, Pennsylvania. And I'm a kid. I'm probably first, second grade. And I remember them taking us there. And my grandmom is laid out in the parlor, like the old days where I'm like, this, you know, I'm thinking like, there's dead bodies in the house.
Yeah.
And I remember going over and being too scared to touch or doing one of these, you know.
And this is before your dad?
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. I'm little, you know, like elementary school. And then before my dad, also ninth grade, we have a kid. I'm going to say his name because he was such a good kid. His name was Jason Shiflett.
Uh-huh.
It's a great kid. Tennis player, like just one of those good students. Everyone loved him. Guys, girls, teachers, one of those kids.
Yeah.
And I don't know what happened, so I don't want to speak in detail. But one night, the story is that, you know, he lived in a little neighborhood, and an older kid who had his license, we're in ninth grade, so maybe a 10th or 11th grader, is driving down the street. And I don't know if he tried to, like just sort of scare him a little bit or what, but the kid accidentally hit him with his car.
Oh.
And it was right in front of his house.
Ah.
And it killed the poor kid. And I'll never forget people telling us that because it's sort of a crime scene in a way where the kid got hit, they fucking put like fluorescent orange dashes for how far he had flown and then an X where he hit. And this is in front of their home. So some neighbor went out and painted over that shit right away. Like, fuck your crime scene accident shit. Like, these poor people.
Yeah.
And I just remember being like, whoa. And this is probably your Keith, you know, like, or excuse me, who was first? It was Keith first.
Yeah.
And I just, it had such an impact because this is like, you know, whoa, one of our classmates is gone and we're all going to this funeral. And what the fuck is this? And then my friend's sister, Kelly, the one I was telling you about, she passed away. And I'm super, her mom was like my mom. And I'm watching these parents like bury a child and like, oh, and they've got their son they have to worry about who's still, we're still best friends. And like, it's just, it's brutal.
It's a huge cascading tsunami avalanche of emotion and information. And
it happens too. My buddy said to his son, this was just a like last year or something. He said, it's senior week or you got, he said, I'm telling you right now, it's very close to graduation. And he goes, there's going to be a bunch of parties. There's going to be a senior weeks or whatever you're going to do. And I'm telling you, if you're not careful, one of these kids isn't making it to graduation. Mm. There's always one. that doesn't make it to graduation. Yeah. And then one of their friends crashed his car drunk or whatever and died.
Oh, man.
This always happens. Cuddly is a fundraising platform that supports animal welfare organizations all over the world. I know a lot of you have rescued. We rescued a little cat named Crystal, Crystal Kitty. She went internet famous, even made it to Ellen. Over 4,000 shelters and rescues trust Cuddly to raise funds and receive donations of supplies for the animals in their care. Cuddly thoroughly vets and verifies every rescue organization they work with. So unlike with other fundraising platforms, you can be certain that your donation is actually going to an animal in need. In order to join the Cuddly platform, an organization must be a 501c3 nonprofit in good standing. All donations made through Cuddly are tax deductible, and it is incredibly easy to access your donation receipt to file with your taxes. Your donation history is clearly visible in your donor account, and Cuddly even puts them all into a single document for you. Now your dollar goes even further. For every $20 donated through a one-time donation, Cuddly will gift a soft and snuggly blanket to a rescue animal in need. Head to cuddly.com/honeydew today to make a donation and help make a difference. That's cuddly.com/honeydew. Now, let's get back to the dew. So who's your third
it's
one?
It's brutal.
How many friends you have that have died, Tom Bob?
Just three.
Just.
Well, and then there's like, you know, there was another good friend of ours right when we got out from high school who was very tight of an in our high school group. But, you know, he wasn't like my bestie guy. But there was, you know, after those first ones and your dad at 16, it's like, you know, there is perspective and it's, but it's weird. Like you don't learn, like I, then, you know, in the interim, there was grandparents and there was a beloved aunt and other people like in family and stuff who die. And
no disrespect, like, those are expected.
They're expected. It's a very different thing.
Very.
It's very different thing.
Yeah.
And yeah, there's so and much also, hope and stuff when they're young.
When you're young also, you feel invincible.
Right, exactly.
You know, you'll do the dumb shit, whatever it is. But now one of us is gone. Guess what? We're not invincible. And it, man, it breaks that barrier immediately.
Like, yeah.
Oh, holy shit. We could die at any moment.
Exactly. Yeah. You're all of a sudden it's all very, very real. But there is that thing too that you don't know which deaths are going to hit you.
Mm-hmm.
Like there have been ones where I would expect like that one wasn't going to hit me that hard. And it does. And I think a lot has to do with, especially when it's expected, not when these tragedies of young people, but you know, older people and people our age, when you're expected to die. And, but a lot of it has to do with you, where you're at that moment, what you're going through, what your life is, how you feel like, and then like surprises of how attached you were to them. All of a sudden, this one like random one who you think wouldn't get you all of a sudden can take your knees out. It just kind of is the condition and part of the journey, I think.
Can I share one with you that you just made me think of?
Yeah.
I don't even know this girl, but I had a roommate. God, this was back in Sherman Oaks. I mean, early 2000s.
Uh-huh.
And he had a friend that was just passing through town on his way to Mexico. And he was like, hey, do you mind if my buddy and his girlfriend just stay the night? They're going on their way to Mexico. And I was like, yeah, I don't care. And I just remember this girl. It's just so cliche. Just I met her. She was young, 20 maybe, 21, bright light, blonde hair, pretty smile, just a very infectious spirit.
Uh-huh.
And they spent the one night. And then the next day they went to Mexico. And according to her family, when they were in Mexico, I guess there's this whole scam where they'll run you off the road and then you crash and they come and they rob your car and shit. And their friends were following behind them. They witnessed someone cross the center line. They go off the edge, roll, and they're dying in the car. Their friends are watching this. They watch the people run down the hill. They don't help them. They don't call anyone. They take wallets, whatever, jewelry, and this girl dies. I met her for, I mean, maybe 3-4 hours we probably talked. And I have never forgotten that. It bothered me so much to think like This is every parent's nightmare. She just got there. She just got there within days. That's every parent's nightmare. Like, you're going to go there. And I mean, then it becomes this whole thing that, you know, we're learning, like, well, you can't just get the body back from Mexico. You got to go through all these steps to do this and that. And man, and I have never, I don't know why. I don't even know who, I can't tell you her name.
Yeah.
I just remember this really nice spirit floated in one night.
Yeah.
And then the next day being told, hey, that girl you met last night's dead. And I was like, wow, just wow.
It's tragic. It's like those stories that, you know, they don't make sense.
Yeah.
They don't make sense. So you keep playing it over and over and over and over and over because you're trying to make sense of this thing and it's senseless.
Who was your third friend?
The third one you knew.
I did.
Who was this? Greg Giraldo.
Oh, yeah. I didn't know you guys were tight like that. I worked with him for a weekend in Brea. Yeah, I loved him. I'd already known who he was before, and I was like, oh, I get the feature for Greg Giraldo. This is great. I mean, so smart, so fucking funny.
Yeah.
You know?
He was the first comedian I ever met.
Is that right?
The first time I ever did stand-up.
Was he out of New York, New Jersey?
He was New York.
Yeah.
It was at the New York Comedy Club on June 12th, 1993. And I walked in, and Gary Greenberg was on stage hosting, and Greg Giraldo was a young, clean-shaven, young pup waiting to go on, sweating, nervous, and me. And the only people in the audience were my six friends that I brought from New Jersey. 5 p.m.
you
in the summer.
The show, huh?
It was still sunny out.
Yeah, that's the worst.
It was completely thing. But we just hit it off immediately. And he was just so great. And, you know, those first days of comedy, you're like, that's like a new brother. Like, it's you're going to make this ride together. And started doing shows with Gaffigan and Greg and Sandy Marks and some other people in the bottoms of these restaurants and doing all this stuff. And I was still living in Jersey, and it was Greg who, then I took a pause because I needed to make some money, and he called me every day telling me, you got to come back. You got to come back.
He did.
Every day. And I came back and lived in the city and was with Greg, and it was, we had motorcycles at the same time in New York. We used to drive.
That's probably fun.
We used to go from the comic strip to the Comedy Cellar. It was like a horrible ride. It was too far to walk to the train. We were too poor to take a cab. So you just had to like get with your friends or do it or have a motorcycle.
What'd you have, by the way?
I had a Yamaha Virago.
Okay.
And so it was I felt very cool. Because I'm the same as I am now. Greg was cool. He had long hair and beard and he had a bike. I had a motorcycle. But it was so cool to like come down to the Cellar. We both got passed at the Cellar. Like he was there before me, but anyway, just to pull in like from the comic strip, you do your set, get your helmet on, cruise down for free back to the Cellar. There would be Greg's bike sitting outside the pizza place, knowing that he was on stage. Then I parked my bike and then go in. It all felt very, very cool and fun. And he was the best. And his family and his wife, and they were all, you know, super tight. There was my comedy best friend, you know, as an adult. And then we know he passed in New Jersey from he was clean and sober. He struggled, like he got in with some stuff, and then he was clean and sober. He was kind of like in such a really good space. He had a boat and he had his three boys
had three boys, did he?
Yeah. And I just talked to his son yesterday, and his oldest one is Gregory, and he's getting into comedy, which
how
is very cool.
Is he?
Yeah, he's like,
does
22.
He look like him?
A little bit. He's got the brain for it. He was doing really well. And the problem with being like the cool guys is that the cool douchey people who partied with you last time you were through town, they're excited that you're coming back to town. And that's what happened. He was at a club in New Jersey, and this couple who he had partied with before came, and they had drugs, they had opioids and coke, and partied with them. And, you know, the problem with opioids is you get high and then you try and come down on this stuff and you can completely, you know, go under. And he was in a hotel room and alone. And
oh, so they left.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know if they were there and left or gave it to him and never went with him. I don't know what the ugly details are, but
does anyone know that?
I think so.
Yeah.
I think so.
When do you find out?
I find out that day. I'm in New York. And I'm in New York. It's like 2010, 2011. And I'm working on a TV show. And we get word. And so I got in a car. And
do you remember who told you?
It was, you know, by the Stress Factory. He was playing the Stress Factory. You ever play there?
No, I haven't.
Never in New Brunswick?
I know where it is. Yeah. In Jersey there.
And, you know, it was like a road gig road gig close to home, you know, it's, Chris Rock always says, don't take the hotel on a local gig. What are you doing? Go home.
Yeah. I've never done that either. I've never even asked for one.
You know, it's an hour and 10 minutes. Just go home. You don't need the hotel.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. Funny thing about being fast, you end up waiting a lot. First to show up, first in line, then just waiting. Me, I rev up Chumba Casino. With over 200 social casino games, no slow lanes here. Why sit around when you can spin? I'm already racing. Your turn. Play for free at ChumbaCasino.com. That's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Drivers who switch and save with Progressive could save hundreds. With that kind of money, you could go big time on a fancy water bottle with ultra titanium alloy metal. You're not sure why you need all that. I mean, it just holds water. But you're getting it anyway. Because if you're hiking near an active volcano and you accidentally drop the bottle into molten lava, your water will still be icy cold. Switch to Progressive and you could save big time. For water bottles. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and affiliates. Not available in all states. Potential savings will vary.
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
But yeah, so then raced over to the hospital and, you know, on life support and same scenario.
And here comes
all the old terms.
Familiar terms that fucking trigger everything you hear.
Yeah, feel. Exactly. So, so that one was brutal too. The good news is I don't have a best friend right now.
I hope you're not shopping for one either.
I'm not.
If you get one, you got to give him a heads up. Like, listen, just want to give you a warning, bro.
No. My wife asked me a little while ago, like, so who's your best friend? And I'm like, I got a lot of friends.
I got a lot of friends. Let's not put anybody at the top.
No one's the best. And I'm not even going to put you as, you know, people do, like, well, my wife is my best friend or my dad is my best. No, I have a lot of friends.
Yeah.
And I have a wife and I have a mom and dad and kids and all that stuff. But
how old are your kids now?
22 and 19.
Now, did they, you said that you know what they're talking about. They're dealing with that sort of, there's a lot of young kids in their life passing away from school and stuff.
Yeah, when they were in high school.
Is this because of the, but there, well, these days was. You got fentanyl out there, which is a whole different fucking
so
thing.
Scary.
And school shootings. I don't want to forget about that.
Well,
I
yeah.
mean, Jesus
and,
Christ.
Yeah, throw in global warming. And then I just heard the donkeys kill more people what? Than shark attacks and plane crashes.
Donkeys.
Donkeys.
I thought hippos were the thing to worry about. It's donkeys
that
say it again, kill more people than what?
Than plane crashes.
Or what?
Or shark attacks. Donkeys. That asshole.
I'm going to look that shit
that
up.
That asshole
now.
At the end of the farmer's market who looks like God turned him off.
But princess
is just
like
is just waiting to kill, like as if you just didn't that, even, as if you didn't have it enough to worry
that's
about.
That's an interesting statistic. People get behind them too much. And
it's
they
horrible.
Kick or something, and boom.
Yeah, or maybe they eat us like lions. I don't
hilarious.
Know.
Hilarious.
But I, yeah. But you know, you could worry about all of it, or you could worry about none of it. You know.
So how do you? What do you? What do you tell them and share with them to help them through something like that? Have you gone to a funeral for a mm-mm. child from your kids? No. But your parents came with you. I'll bet you. You ever talked to your parents about that? What it was like to go see Keith or any of these people at a funeral?
No, I never talked to them about it. I remember watching, like when I said, like when I was observing everything, mm-hmm. I remember watching my father at the wake. I always remember that part as he was, you know, he was like his son too. So he was very chatty. He was trying to talk. He was trying to not cry and get through the line.
Keep it busy.
But talking, and I was like, no, not now, no, no, you know. And he was like, but wanted to like, and I was just, you know, even at that age, I was like, he's just dealing with it his way, but it was making me very uncomfortable. And he, you know, watching the rock in your life break down was, you know, that's impossible. But no, I never talk about it with them, but they know like that it was like, you know, it's still with me now. Like,
yeah.
You know, it's like,
do your kids know about what you've done with Keith and his memory?
Yes. I don't think they've read the essay in the book, or
little Dave get a shout out on anything other than this
yeah,
podcast.
Dave,
all right, good.
Dave
little Dave
one.
Made it. All right,
little
good.
Dave was in book three.
He got there now. He's in the trilogy.
Yeah, that's it's funny because I'm slow into my fourth book. I'm like, what's it gonna be? What's it gonna be? And it's like, I don't have anyone to shout out. I guess I could put Geraldo in it.
You haven't yet?
No,
that's the guy.
Yeah, maybe. It's weird because everyone. Not everyone, but a lot of people know him.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So I keep that one a little more private. You
yeah,
know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Even like when there was like other comics like commenting on him and stuff. It was kind of similar to the thing when I was saying in the beginning of like watching as a young kid, watching people just come to the funeral because it was a cool thing to do in high school. Mm-hmm. You know, they weren't really friends with him and pretending to be so sad and learning what that thing was, you know, that kind of thing. It repeats itself all the time. You know, people show up at wakes. I'm sure there's like some aunts, like she was never friends with him. Or, you
yeah,
know what I mean? I'm sure,
sure
it always kind of happens that way.
For
but
sure.
With Greg, it was a lot of that too, because it was like, I knew all of his closest friends and in comedy, and some were like on shows and like really talking about the great Greg. And I was like, dude, I know what your relationship was with him. You know, so I tend to keep that one a little bit more private because it, you know, he's public.
Did I ask you this one wrap up here? Did he have a good balance of like people from childhood and his youth that showed up, like good people he was still connected with?
Yeah, Greg.
Yeah,
yeah.
I say that because I remember when Brody passed, uh-huh. I went to his thing at the Comedy Store and. You know, his name was Stephen Brody Stevens.
Right.
And they brought up his little league coach and all these kids that had grown up with him first. And they all knew him and referred to him as Stephen. And then, you know, it hits me too. Like, oh, yeah, all of us that know each other met each other later in life, even though we're this sort of whatever fraternity. Or we met each other later in life. You forget that.
Yeah.
These people have passed 20 years and they're brothers with them and
right.
like they know them better than you do. And it's just was really nice to see not that we're not normal people, we're not,
yeah.
but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Friends and family from you know, years gone by say, hey, no, I knew him when he was 10 and this is what he was like. I like that.
Yeah, it's a mystery of life in a way that everybody is really their own thing. Everybody's their own on their own little journey. And as close as you are to, you know, your spouse or your kids, you really don't know all about them. You really don't. I remember watching that with my grandmother when she passed, one of my grandmothers. And it was like, we knew her as, you know, we knew her as Nana, and she was did this with us, and we knew about her sisters and brothers and some of those peripheral family members. But then I remember watching, like, this group is from the library where she's a volunteer.
Yeah, exactly.
That
yeah.
one's from her card group sure, that she plays sure, within.
Yeah, yeah.
She bowled? When did she bowl? Who are these eight people there?
Yeah.
Why are all these priests in love with her? Why,
yeah.
like, and like, you know, everybody has their own mm-hmm. full bag of adventures that nobody else knows about. As close as you get and as much as you download everything to your, at the end of the day, it's too much. There's too much going on to really plug someone in, especially when they're doing the same thing and they can only retain that much. It's, yeah, it's pretty interesting.
Well, now I'm interested in what you're going to say to this question, but advice you would give to 16-year-old Tom Papa now after what we've talked about?
The advice I would give to 16-year-old me would be... you're in it. It's not coming. You're not going to get there. You're in it. I know you see like bigger people around doing stuff. No, you're doing it. You're in it. This is prime time. Don't wait. Don't be patient. Do whatever you want to do and do it now, because it's all very fleeting. And there are people that find their vocation at six, you know, in centuries before, people had whole careers by 16. And I know the culture is like puts off growing up and stuff, but I would say yes to 16-year-old version. No, you're in it now. Get to work.
That's great.
Yeah.
Hey, thank you very much. I know this was a heavy topic. Thank you for sharing this.
It's all right. I've talked about it a lot.
Good.
Not on podcasts, though.
Yeah.
So you're exclusive. But
thank you.
But yeah, it's fun to talk about it. I mean, it's not fun, but
yeah, I get it.
It's rich.
Yeah, it's rich. Yeah.
Well, you know, you made
and
a
rewarding.
Podcast about it.
please promote everything again you'd like.
Just go watch Home Free on Netflix. And then I've got two or three other specials on there as well. Digest them all, and go get the books. That'd be a good thing. Mm-hmm. Some of the stuff we were talking about, you can read those also, or listen to them, or just put them on yourselves and pretend that you read them.
Thank you, Tom Papa.
You're the best.
Thank you very much.
All right.
As always, Ryan Sickler on all your social media. Come see me on the road if I'm in your town when you're around. Tickets are on my website at ryansickler.com. We'll talk to y'all next week.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group.
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.